0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And 51551 is our text number. As you know, if you want to sit your driving test in Ireland, you must, no choice, thanks to the government, you must pay for 12 lessons. And at the moment, apparently the figure is you pay between 600 and 1,000 euro. This is mandatory. And you go to a driving instructor. Now, be clear in your head, we're not talking about driver testers. We're talking about driving instructors. They are approved by the Road Safety Authority, which is a government quango, whatever, in charge of all of that. And but there was 128 complaints, which, given the difficulty people normally have in trying to make a complaint to the Transport for Ireland or the taxi regulator, same thing, taxi regulator, whatever, is quite a lot. And those complaints spoke about inappropriate behaviour by driving instructors, primarily against young women sitting in the car, in the driver's seat, and being asked if they were single. There was a story today that one male learner driver was physically attacked by the driving instructor. Young female was told by the instructor, handle your handbrake, brace yourself if there's children in the, put your hand over their ears, handle your handbrake like you handle your boyfriend, and the list goes on. Now, a number of driving instructors. Joe, good afternoon. Joe, you've been a driving instructor for 35 years. Well done. How do you become, who tests you, who regulates you?
Well, the Road Safety Authority tests us.
In what way?
We have to go through stringent rules. Well, we have to go through a three-part test, and it is stringent. It's a written test, it's a driving test, and then you have to give two half-hour lessons for your first, the third part of it.
And who
would... So you can't go through to the second part until you pass the first, and you can't go through to the third part until you pass the first two.
Okay, but who inspects you? Is there one person, a group of people?
Well, it's the Road Safety Authority, and they nominate the driving tester that tests us. I normally get tested in Finglas.
And they
test the driving standards. Your
oh, so it's a driver. It's the driving. It's the same people that would do the driving test.
No. No, it's above them. It's like a fella above them. You know what I mean?
Okay, but it's one person.
It's one person, yeah. And there's a few of them in different sections of the country. They cover different sections of the country. You know?
Have you come across anyone who's been refused
a driving lesson test?
How do you fail it?
Well, if you're not up to standard, you have to pass 12 or a lot of components on the sheet, and if you don't come through it, mannerism. How you impart information, how you speak to people, no big words, a laid-back manner and everything like that. And I've always been fairly okay with the test.
Okay.
They've always been
and
fair
Joe,
with me, you know.
Do you have to pay the RSA every year to stay as a qualified driving instructor?
You have to pay €250 every 2 years. You must get your check test every 2 years. A check test is you must give, you can either bring a pupil to the test centre in Finglas or Aheeny, and one of the testers will test you with the pupil. Now, if you have a pupil, you get your result on the spot. If not, if you haven't got a pupil, the tester acts as the pupil, and you will get a result in a couple of days.
Okay, but you paid...
But it's a very high standard nowadays, you know what I mean?
Okay, well then if it's... I'm thinking of yourself, 35 years, well done. But this 128 complaints is a lot.
Because people, I'm not surprised.
They're not allegations. Sorry, they're not just allegations. They're people who actually took the time to complain.
Yeah, sure. We've all seen the complaints. Well, I read the article this morning. It was shocking, but not surprising. Because, you know, we all know what's going on. And, like, there's testers out there, and they see what's going on. You know what I mean?
So what's going
they
on?
They see it.
What's
themselves.
Going on?
Well, we all see the smokers getting out of the car smoking for 20 minutes during lessons. People going, bringing pupils to shops and doing their shopping during the lesson. People going for petrol. I'm 25 years young. I've never bought anyone for petrol. I always get me petrol when it's finished or before it. Because, I mean, if you're charging money for a lesson, you have to give a quality lesson. And that's what the roadside authority insists on, is a quality lesson.
But so you're saying, okay, the lesson is what, an hour? Is it 50 minutes an hour?
An hour long, yeah. And okay. And you're timed on that as well. You know, you're marked on that as well during the test that you're lesson.
Okay, but you're not, there's no way of recording the time when you're, when you, no. they have a learner driver. So it is mandatory.
No, they watch it on it.
It is mandatory. How long is it mandatory, Joe? That wasn't always mandatory to take 12 years.
2011.
Okay, so it's mandatory now for 12 years. Has there been a, because it's what, much a lesson on average, do you think?
Well, it's 45 right up to 65, 70 euros a lesson.
Okay.
The big schools can, are charging a lot.
And you pay 12. You have to do 12 of
them. Some can pay up front and they get a discount. Some can pay as they go. And, you know, it's a little bit extra for each lesson.
But you still, you have to do 12 of them, so to speak.
You must do 12 lessons,
and you have to have a book or a certificate, isn't
it? You get a log book, yeah.
Okay.
And each time you do a lesson, it's recorded in the book and then it's logged in onto the roadside authority's website.
It's logged in by you? By the instructor?
Yeah, by me, yeah. I log in the
But as you're saying, because it's in 50 minutes an hour, there's no way, and I take your point, there's no way if there are some messers, to say the least, there's no way that during that hour the driving instructor can stand outside the car for 20 minutes having a smoke or go in and get petrol or go in and do shopping.
No, that's not allowed. No. But
it's obviously happening.
Everybody knows it's happening and everyone can see it's happening.
So why
everyone can see it.
But have you heard of anyone being struck off by the RSA?
Not at the moment, no. Not at the moment. But people are afraid, Joe, to complain.
Okay, why?
Whatever it is about instructors, it seems to be a little bit intimidated by their instructors. Like, I had two girls down at St. Anne's down here, and they're two sisters, and they paid 1,200, 600 each for 12 lessons, and never turned up. And I said to them, report it.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't because they said he lived in the area and they were afraid of him. So I reported it and I was told by the roadside authority that the pupil has to report it. But it's on the website. If you find rogue instructors, report them.
Are you sure about that? The RSA said to you, we can't, and I understand people are in a difficult position because they've got to get that book with the 12 stamps on it, whatever, before they can even go for the test. You're saying a young pupil said to you, did they pay him up front and he never turned up?
He never turned up.
And they paid him up front?
They paid him on the first lesson and he never came back.
And when you brought that to the RSA, they said?
The pupil has to report it, not me. But the two girls were a little bit intimidated by the instructor.
Of course, yeah.
They said he lived in the area and he didn't want to get involved. So I gave them the 12 lessons. I had to. You know what I mean? And I gave it to them reduced because they were at the paying so much.
And then you give them a book at the end with a stamp in it.
I give them a log book with a stamp
in it. A log book, okay. But without, I will not get into the driver tester centre without that log book.
Well, you get in once your lessons are logged in.
Yeah, but that's what I mean, yes.
Since COVID, they're not really asking to show the log book.
But before 2011...
No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't see a test without the logbook filled in.
Okay, so in the last 10 years, have the number
the
of driving and
yeah,
but in the last 10 years, when about 10 years, I don't know how lucrative it is, but 50, 60 quid a lesson for an hour, and especially if you're doing a lot of them, in the last 10 years, so there must have been a massive growth in the number of driving instructors.
There is, but a lot of them come in March and go in September, wherever they're the winter months. They don't seem to like doing it in the winter months. Like, you'd see a spate of new names at March or February,
okay,
and then in October, and then there'd be another new spate of them out in March, and they'd be gone then the following year. You know what I mean? And some of them don't like, see, driving lessons are done after walking hours, and a lot of people don't like walking evenings.
Okay, so driver instructors. Okay.
Yeah.
By the way, is there any evidence that, I don't think there's any evidence that the NCT effectively is, despite the cost of it and the way it's enforced in Ireland, has made any difference to road safety. The improvement of cars and roads seems to have made a big difference, and driver behaviour seems to have made a big difference to road safety. Is there any evidence that having to do 12 mandatory lessons with a driving instructor has improved the pass rate in the driving tester centres?
Well, so looking at the statistics, it hasn't.
Exactly.
Looking at the statistics.
So why do I have to shell out between 600 and a grand?
Well, that's the rules that the road safety authority brought.
Oh, I know that, and that's their job. They're collecting money as well off y'all.
Yeah, but before the road safety authority, we were all members of a thing called the DIR, and it was voluntary.
Okay, of course.
And we paid in for that every 2 years. And if your code of conduct wasn't good, you were suspended off that. And there were a few people suspended off that. Now, I've never heard anyone suspended out of the road safety authority.
But that's you know what I mean? Yeah, it's true.
But, you know, standards, like, you've got to remember now the population is going up. So standards have improved if the numbers of deaths are still relatively low.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's a lot more cars on the road.
There's too many dying, but there's the number of deaths per cars on the road has gone down dramatically. And that's down to cars. It's down to young people as well being a lot more computer literate and PlayStation literate and being able to, but the RSA would say, well, I don't know what the RSA would say, but I just wonder why everyone has to pay, young people especially, have to shell out €1,000 for 12 lessons.
You see, some people, before the 12 lessons came in, we go up to a door. It happened to me. A father would come in and say, get lost, I'll teach them myself.
Yeah, I know. Don't
so
know.
You were, there were standards that were very low then because of that fact. And it was a good thing that it was brought in. But the problem with the 12 lessons is, before the 12 lessons came in, people used to take a lesson a week, and they might take 30 lessons. But now they take 12 lessons, and the tests take so long to come up then. They can ring you the week before the test, so it might be 6 months they haven't driven it.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And that's a problem.
Well, they could drive if they had a provisional licence and a full licence beside them in the car.
Well, a lot of people haven't, especially for the nationals coming in here are on their own, and they haven't got a car, and they haven't got a family member to teach them or sit with them in the car. And that is a big problem. But they think taking 12 lessons, that's it. Get me tests now, and they ring you a week beforehand, and that's the end of it. But when they fail, then it's on Facebook that the tester is this and that. And the other. But, you know, tests are fairly good. Nobody fails you if you're not a good driver.
Yeah, but the failure rate hasn't changed since these 12 lessons were made mandatory.
No, but the instruction has.
The instruction has. What do you mean the instruction has?
Well, a lot of it. Like, I mean, I was down there last week and a fella came down for his test. He got the bus down for his test. Now, most instructors will tell a pupil, you have to bring your car. He left his car at home and got the bus down. I mean, that's...
Well, what did he think? What did he think he was going to be tested in jail, the bus?
No, he got the bus down. The lad didn't know.
What did he think? He was going to be put in front of a console and a screen with a steering wheel, with a hula hoop for a steering wheel.
None of us know, but I mean, that's up to an instructor to teach him that. Like, Joe, I have 12 people from different driving schools. I run U-Drive. And any of the driving schools that's on the road, you know the good ones. Callan,
okay,
ADMS.
We won't go through names because then it's the names you leave out that will get us into trouble. Instructor, I'm reading the Daily Mail today. One instructor told a learner driver she was drop dead gorgeous, kept saying to her, "Who's your daddy? Who's your daddy? Who's your daddy?" Whatever, well, you know what that phrase means. Girls on, wait for this again, girls on, to use the instructor's phrase, the approved driving instructor. ADI said to her in the car, girls on their period never do well in the driving test because it affects their coordination and they, quote, get flustered.
Yeah, I've heard all that, Joe.
You've heard
all
that?
I've heard all that off pupils, yeah. Pupils come to me. I have one Chinese lad now and he's verbally abused by his driving instructor.
In what way?
Like? Terribly abused. Told him to get the F out of the car that he'd never drive, he couldn't steer, do this and that. And, like, I mean, what's he paying him for then? If he can't steer, he used to teach him to steer. What's he paying him for?
Yeah,
why
no,
are you in
exactly.
this trade? Why are you in this game if you're shouting at them and telling them you can't?
And like, why... go back to those two girls who complained to you rather than the RSA. Why are people afraid to complain to the RSA about dodgy driving instructors?
They were afraid of your man. They were afraid of this fella. They were a little bit intimidated by him. I said to them, the RSA will sort her out. And they said, no. He knows where we live. He picked us up at the house.
One driving lesson consisted of the instructor left him as a young man in the car waiting 20 minutes, made him pull into a shop and went in, stopped the lesson for about 15 minutes to watch a couple having an argument.
We all know all this. we all know all these instructors. There's rumours have been going around for years.
Why isn't anything being done about them by the organisation that's paid handsomely to regulate them?
I don't know, Joe. Okay. You know, I don't know. Oh, wait, they regulate the standards. They don't regulate the behaviour. They test you on your behaviour.
Yeah, but if you have regulations, you have to have policing. Obviously,
yeah,
then
true.
The
but how do you police an individual in a car with a driver?
Well, if someone
I have cameras in my car.
I know, but if someone complains, well, there should be. Oh, I'm sure there is a system. But if maybe they should insist that every driving instructor has a camera, and every now and again they're asked to submit last week's. Give me a specific day last week. Give me your tape for Wednesday afternoon. I presume we all have to be Garda vetted.
Yeah.
Okay,
we do.
That's straightforward. Okay. 0818 715 815. Jimmy Cleary, joe@rt.ie. Jimmy, you think the industry is well regulated by the RSA?
Yeah, it is very well regulated, and they're very, very professional. Any of the people that I've dealt with in the Road Safety Authority have treated me with the utmost of respect, and I treat my clients exactly the same way.
Of course.
Now,
yeah.
The thing about it is, when a person sits into my car, they're feeling nervous. And my reply to them is, you're supposed to be nervous. What you're about to do is dangerous. So it's a normal feeling. Just accept how you're feeling. And I try to create a safe environment for them. Now, having a safe environment also means injecting a sense of humour as well. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because these people, they're terrified when they get into the car. And they have a preconceived notion as well, which may be a throwback to the past.
Yeah.
Will he be giving out to me? Will he be shouting at me? Now, I have heard this from other people who have come to me, from other driving instructors, where they were shouting at their clients. That's the last thing you will hear from me.
Okay, Jimmy, you're lying, unfortunately, it's just incomprehensible. We'll have to get Ofcom or whoever they are in Ireland to regulate the mobile phone lines. They can be very difficult. But Joe, what, because Jimmy was alluding to it there, people hear him, that he's a good sense of humour, he tries to relax them. Is there a prospect that the sense of humour might be misinterpreted?
Sometimes. Sometimes
you know,
it can be
banter,
but like you do have to have a little bit of banter with people. But sometimes, you know, it's taken up wrong. I would say, like, I had a girl one day, and I said to her, "What gear were you in going around the roundabout last week?" And she says to me, "Your blue dress and the yellow top." And I said to her, "No, I meant what gear in the car." And it took about 10 minutes for the penny to drop. And she kept saying to me, "I was wondering why you're asking what clothes I was in." I said, "I wasn't. I was asking what gear the car was in."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And, you know, people get so nervous, they go blind and things like that. But, you know, there does have to be a bit of banter.
Do instructors, do you have dual controls?
Absolutely, yeah. It would be too dangerous to do it without it.
Oh, and would every driving instructor have dual controls?
Absolutely. It's a requirement to be a driving instructor and the proper insurance.
So, of course, yeah. But you have a brake, a clutch and an accelerator.
You can have a brake, a clutch, and accelerator. Most only have a brake and a clutch.
Okay. And is it expensive to get a car done that way?
It can be up to $750.
Oh, is that
to
all?
Get it going. Yeah.
Okay.
Up to $750.
And what can you can turn? I presume you can turn it on and off.
Oh yeah, you can clip them out.
You don't want your kid sitting in the front seat doing a tap dance while you're driving.
Well, I leave them in all the time, but you can clip them out if you want.
Okay.
You know. But like that, now you're tested on your, you know, your humour and your thing in the car, and it has to be laid back humour and not aggressive nature or anything in your test as well. So he's right, they're outside the authority, their standards are very high when you're doing your test, but the problem is not when you're doing your test, it's after you've done your test.
And
how do you police that?
Exactly,
and like you said, if you could take the card out and show them the card, maybe that would solve it, I don't know.
Random,
but I still think you will get rogue instructors,
there's so much money involved. They should. Jimmy, I think is back on a better line this time. Jimmy,
yeah.
Jimmy, do you think sense of humour can be misunderstood?
Nobody has ever misinterpreted my sense of humour. I have one of my clients put a 5-star review up on the Road Safety Authority. Jimmy is very professional. At the same time, he has a wicked sense of humour. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So leading up to the driving test, when people are learning how to drive, first of all, I introduce them to the 6 primary controls, okay? The accelerator, the brake, the clutch, the accelerator. The first couple of driving lessons can be stressful, equally so for the driving instructor as well as their client. And I try to reassure them that both of us are learning. It's not just the known to the unknown. I have learned more from my clients, believe it or not. I'm doing this now 16 years. And my clients are good teachers as well.
Okay. We've a long statement in from the RSA, but it's basically what we already know. They have an exam. They don't ask us. I think we did ask them how many driving instructors have been struck off. They don't tell us that. There are 2,500 driving instructors, approved driving instructors in Ireland. That's up from 1,700. It's up over 1,000. In the last 3 years, wow!
There are a lot of driving instructors after coming on board at the moment.
Why wouldn't they? When the government forces young learner drivers to go to them, and to pay them between 6,000 and 1,000,
the state are now paying people that are unemployed to do these courses to become a driving instructor, and they have the state look for a driving school, they say, and they will pay that school, and that school will take in 7 to 10 people that are unemployed, that have their own vehicles. They'll train them up as driving instructors. And like, I had one driving instructor came to me, and I set him in the back seat because he's living near me, you know, and I'm not one bit afraid of competition. I'm good at what I do. So he said to me, Jimmy, he said, have you any tips? I said, you can sit in the back and you can listen to me while I give instructions. And he said to me, he said, we didn't get any, what you were doing with your training, we didn't get any of that when we were training to be driving instructors. A simple little thing like, hang on the gear lever, ease off the accelerator pedal, clutch pedal down into second gear. None of that.
And the RSA say every approved driving instructor is Garda vetted,
yeah.
But that's, everyone in the country at this stage is Garda vetted.
Garda vetted.
Everyone in the country.
When I started teaching first year, in fairness, but like looking back at it now in hindsight, when I started, and I'm being honest here with my hand on my heart, okay, the Road Safety Authority were absolutely brilliant towards me. And okay. I even said it to them. I said, look, when I did my check test first, you could have easily failed me, looking back at it. I could have easily failed that check test, looking back at it in hindsight. Now, I've gotten better over the years. I've become better at what I do. Because I've learned more from experience. But anybody that sits in that has done a 9-week course with any school of motoring in this country is not going to be an excellent driving instructor. They will be good because they know how to drive. But what you're doing, they're communicating the known to the unknown.
Okay.
And I'll give you a brilliant example of that. If you want to teach an alien how to brush their teeth, you're going to introduce them to toothpaste. But you're going to tell them what toothpaste is. You're going to tell them what the top of a toothpaste is. You're going to tell them what a toothbrush is. You're going to teach them what teeth are. You know, so it's the known to the unknown. First you tell them what you're going to tell them, then you tell them, then you tell them what you told them when you're wrapping up the lesson. You know, I've learned all this over the years. I'm also a lawyer.
Okay, your line is just... Jamie, there's no point in continuing. I'm sorry, the line is gone.
Yeah.
Joe, you've been doing it for 35 years. Sorry about that, Jamie. You've been doing it for 35 years. Has the standard of young person getting in to be taught how to drive by you, has their opening standard improved? Do you follow me with PlayStation?
Well, like you mean
computers?
Getting in, they've had a few lessons with dad and mom?
Yeah. Has their opening standard improved? Because there's a lot more cars that they can generally...
Some of them have and some of them haven't. You know, okay, some young people have. It's a very vague answer because you can judge it on, you know it from area to area where it's going to be. Like if the father is off a lot longer and he has time out, because you can see the kids out in the cars with the parents that are taking an interest, and then you go back to other parents and they have no interest and they're not taking the kids out. You have to, like, you can't just do 12 lessons and expect to be able to drive. You have to get out with your father or your mother.
Okay, Joe, safe travelling, Joe. Joe at rte.ie, 51551 is the text number.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. And on the last Friday of this month, June the 30th, we will be in the Titanic Hotel in Belfast for Funny Friday. The Titanic Hotel in Belfast on the last Friday of this glorious month of June. Is Benny there? Is Benny there? And I'm waiting on... there, here he is now. Brendan Lewis, Benny, yes, sir. Was it at the weekend, I was listening to a TED Talk about how to learn new languages. It was fascinating. But in it, the TED Talk giver mentioned an Irishman called Benny. That was the only information she gave. The Irishman called Benny, who she said at that stage could speak 10 languages, even though when he left school in Ireland, having studied Irish, Benny, for 15 years, he didn't seem to be fluent in Irish. But we've tracked Benny down, our intrepid team here. And Benny Lewis, where are you now?
Hello, how are you doing? I'm talking to you from Seoul, Korea at the moment.
Okay, and there is a delay. Tell us, how many languages with various degrees of competency, Benny, can you engage in?
My best languages would be Portuguese, Spanish and French. I could probably work as an engineer in those languages. Wow. And I've got Italian, German and Esperanto. And I could have very competent conversations in those. Yeah. And then finally, I'd add Mandarin, American Sign Language, Irish, Korean, and Catalan. And if I'm talking to a patient speaker, I can have decent conversations.
So we're getting up to 10, 15, 20 languages.
I had others that I dabbled in, but, you know, you have to maintain them or you lose them.
Okay. Now, by the way, is there anyone in the world speaking Esperanto anymore, apart from you?
I actually started this year in a small village in Germany at an Esperanto gathering with 200 people. It's like the easiest language in the world to learn, especially if you know a couple of other Latin languages. So I just learned it for fun. It wasn't a lot of effort, so I figured why not.
And would you explain, Benny, there's a little bit of a delay. Would you explain, just to stick to Esperanto for a minute, because a lot of people have never heard of it, younger people especially. What is Esperanto? Who invented it? And what are the benefits of it? And why did it never... Benny, did it never take off?
Yeah, so Esperanto was created in the late 1800s by this guy, a Polish guy called Zamenhof. Okay. And he created it because at the time, French was essentially the international language, the lingua franca.
Okay.
And he didn't like that it was unfair if you're not a native French speaker. It's essentially the same problem we have nowadays, that if you're not a native English speaker, then it's not fair that you have to learn this somewhat complicated language that is not your own, but it's the international language. So he thought it would be more fair if there was a neutral second language, and he created it from scratch and intentionally made it the easiest language in the world. And it actually started gaining a lot of traction over time, but various things worked against it. So at the time, modern Hebrew didn't actually exist. So a lot of different Jewish communities started to use Esperanto to communicate between each other. And that was a problem because that was leading up to the Second World War. And there were actually Nazi campaigns against Esperanto speakers because of that connection.
Wow.
So it lost a lot of momentum, mainly because of that. But to this day, it spans back a little bit. Like I said, there's communities that meet up. I believe there's actually more articles on Wikipedia in their Esperanto version than there are in the Arabic version, if you believe that.
Okay, and is there an Esperanto Institute?
Kind of officially, yeah. Like, there are European Common Framework exams that you can take in all of the European languages, and they have an equivalent one for Esperanto. It's just, it doesn't have any kind of, significance in the job market.
Okay.
It's just more of a hobbyist thing that people would go for.
And how would you, I'm not going to put you on the spot over languages except this one. How would you say in Esperanto, today is a lovely day and I'm looking forward to the summer?
Hodiaŭ estas tre bela tago kaj mi antaŭ ĝojas la someron.
And how would you say that in German?
So you, heute ist ein sehr schöner Tag und ich sehe die Sommer sehr vor. haven't used my German in a while, so that's a bit more rusty.
Portuguese.
Hoje é dia muito lindo. Estou ansioso para que venha o verão.
French.
And I can probably do, probably do all the languages, but it's really hard for me to turn the gears and switch them. I'm going to make more mistakes.
Well, okay, Benny, go back to where we're doing. You know, today is the first day of the Leaving Cert here in Ireland. We never do the Leaving Cert on Liveland. They're under enough pressure. But just as a bit of relevancy or topicality, how did you do in your Leaving Cert in Irish, which you studied for, like the rest of us, 12, 13 years, mm-hmm. on the subject you took in your Leaving Cert, the language subject, which was German, I think.
German for me.
And how did you do in your Leaving, Benny?
I had to drop down to pass Irish for the Leaving, and I think I got a B in it. And then for German, I still did the honours, but I only got a C in that. And I ended up studying engineering at UCD, so... Like, languages were absolutely not my skill in school. And for anyone who didn't do well in school, all that really means is that you're not suited to language exams. That doesn't say anything to your aptitude to use languages in the real world. And that's something that I discovered as an adult when I got into languages later in life.
And how did you get into languages then, Benny, if you weren't keen on them when you were doing your Leaving? You weren't keen on the exam.
Yeah, because I moved to Spain, and I thought just living in the country could actually do it for me. But as I'm sure many of your listeners know, that doesn't really... There's lots of people who go to another country for a long time and they don't really pick anything up. And unfortunately, that happened to me. I spent 6 months in Spain and I didn't pick up a sniff of Spanish because I was just in the expat bubble and not really using it. And I kept telling myself, maybe there's some right brain, left brain thing going on where I'm good at maths and I'm good at the sciences and I'm just bad at languages and that's just my destiny. But I kept seeing exceptions to that. I kept seeing other people coming to Spain in the same field of engineering and they would pick up Spanish. And it showed me that I really had to question these ideas, and maybe the ideas themselves were self-fulfilling prophecies because I've been telling myself for decades that I'm bad at languages. So I was essentially making it true. And what changed was I did a little experiment where I decided for a whole month, I'm going to speak nothing but Spanish. And it was pretty terrible Spanish. It was caveman Spanish, where I would just piece together terrible grammatical structures and I barely know any words. And I wasn't sure if it was going well. And then one day, my electric toothbrush broke, and I was so annoyed at it because I was on a really tight budget. I stormed to the shop that I bought it in. I was going to demand my money back, and I realized just as I walked up to the clerk, I don't know how to say toothbrush in Spanish. I don't know how to say refund, and I don't know how to say broken. So I did what I could, and I said, tooth machine bad, máquina de dientes malo, money... round trip back and forth, dinero y de vuelta, and it didn't make any sense, but they understood me and I got my money back. And ultimately that just made me realize that communication was the main factor here. And the problem with something like exams that people might sit is it really ingrains in our mind that languages are academic, that you either are right or wrong, and every mistake you make is a big red X that brings you closer to a fail. But I've learned in the last 20 years of traveling and language learning that mistakes are actually my friend. And I try to make at least 200 mistakes a day because that means I'm pushing myself and I'm getting them out of my system. And I'm going to essentially suck a little less every day is the way I try to think of it as I'm progressing in the language.
And which language did you learn first? Was that Spanish? Second language, I mean.
Yeah, so after the first failed 6 months, I did eventually get some progress with Spanish, and I eventually got a C2 diploma, which is a mastery level diploma in the language, so that I could become a translator. But after that, I moved on to the other Romance languages, so Italian and French and Portuguese. Okay. And then from there, I expanded it a bit more, and that's why I'm currently in South Korea.
And what are you learning in South Korea?
Korean. One way I try to make it a little more fun for me is I try to do something culturally relevant. So I'm learning Korean through K-pop dance lessons.
I'll take your word for it, Benny. I really will. Somebody said when you spoke Portuguese there, was that Brazilian Portuguese or Portuguese? Do you follow me?
Brazilian Portuguese.
Well done.
Yeah,
I spent two years
in Brazil.
Well spotted by our listener. Well spotted. Okay, so give me tips. First of all, what was the easiest language to learn? None of them are easy. And what is the hardest?
Well, people are always surprised when I tell them this, the hardest language, and I've dabbled in the likes of Hungarian, I've done Quechua, which is the Inca language, and I've done Mandarin, I'm doing Korean right now. But out of all the language I've learned, the hardest one was Spanish, because that was the first one that I truly put an effort into. So, yeah, you could talk about grammar and conjugations and all that kind of stuff, or that Chinese has tones and whatever. But ultimately, what makes a language hard or easy is your attitude towards it. And when I was learning Spanish, I kept telling myself, you're an idiot. People are going to laugh at you when you speak Spanish. They are they're not going to enjoy talking to you. So I kept putting myself down, and that made the language a lot harder to learn. And of course, I didn't have a very efficient process to actually learn it initially. It took me a while to figure out a bit more of a smoother learning experience for the future languages. But in comparison to that, even the Asian languages, I've gotten much further, much faster compared to Spanish.
And what's Korean like to learn? You're learning it now through what? Dance classes? K-pop?
Well, I'm not learning it through K-pop, but K-pop is the way I'm having fun with the language. I learned it through one-on-one lessons that I got online. And when you get them with a teacher online, you can usually get an affordable teacher, so you can do it pretty regularly. And what I like to do, people are very quick to say why a language is hard, and they could tell you why Korean is hard, but I'm way more interested in why it's easy, because that mental switch, the optimism, really fuels my learning. So I could give you loads of reasons why Korean is an easy language. Its writing system is the most logical I've ever seen in any language in the world. So you can learn how to read. Initially, you would just think Korean is just this crazy circles and lines.
Yeah.
But you genuinely can learn the entire phonetic alphabet in a single afternoon. And now when I use it, I think, how do other languages use other scripts? Like even the Latin script we use in English or Irish seems inefficient to me in comparison. And then the language itself has it lacks so many things that a lot of European languages have. So it doesn't have any complex conjugations, and it doesn't have male or masculine or feminine nouns. There's so many things that are kind of removed from it that I find it a very logical language. So I'm really enjoying the experience of learning it, and that really changes it. Because if you're dragging your feet and you're not enjoying learning a language and it's a chore, that is going to make it hard. And I try to find ways to make it much more enjoyable, and that's kind of, it gives me that motivational boost to keep moving forward with it.
Okay. The next language I want to try and get you into your head is Italian. I'll give you a little bit, I'll tell you the sentence. But because, Benny, you mentioned online, is it much handier now to learn a language because of the smartphone, because of the internet, because of Zoom, because of YouTube, because of Netflix, that we can go into, we can watch a movie in French, we can watch Friends in German or whatever. And does that help, do you think, if I'm learning, say I'm learning German, does it help if I start watching Friends in German?
That could absolutely help. And I started watching Simpsons in Spanish when I was in Spain.
Okay.
And the fact that I had already seen it in English meant I didn't need the subtitles. So I actually got into the flow of the language without being distracted by the story. So it does help. And then there's loads of amazing series that come out in other languages that, you know, when you limit yourself to just the English language media, there's so many other fascinating things. I really enjoy that for that purpose. But to answer your question, absolutely, the way languages can be learned now compared to when I started 20 years ago, it's a world of difference. Like, I used to have to go out of my way to find a private teacher in the same city that I was living in, and I'd have to commute to them, or I'd have to pay lot more if I wanted them to come to me. And I was limited. Even when I was in the country that spoke the language, I still had a limited amount of teachers, whereas the world is my oyster with the amount of teachers I can choose and the times they're available and the budget that I can pay them. So it's just absolutely incredible. And the amount of media, like when I wanted to watch a movie in a language and I wasn't in that country, it would be next to impossible. If you were lucky, maybe some DVDs had some dubbed translations, but it wasn't very frequent. But nowadays, like you said, like every show that's produced, like I remember when a year or two ago when WandaVision came out on Disney Plus, I was able to watch it in 10 different languages the same day that it came out without paying anything extra, because that was just included in the streaming service.
Okay,
so you can make that switch, and they do a great job as well at it.
Okay, just reminding this is where this conversation with Benny Lewis is coming from, the Irish polyglot. Last week it was claimed on, we were talking about dementia and Alzheimer's, and one of our listeners, we were talking about learning Irish, and one of our listeners said, did you know that if you learn a second language, it can offset the onset of Alzheimer's? And that's how we got into, is learning a second language. And then we've come across the man who's on the programme now, Benny Lewis. And Benny Lewis is known, and he's on Twitter as the Irish polyglot. Can you speak Irish, by the way, Benny?
Yes, even though I did, like I said, drop down to pass Irish, I eventually went to this lovely school in Glenconnamkill called Idjiscale. And I've gone back there multiple times to get my Irish up to a basic conversation level. So definitely not among my best languages, but still very usable.
And Benny Lewis from Ireland. What part of Ireland are you from originally, Benny?
I'm from Cavan.
From Cavan, good man. Benny Lewis can speak Irish, English, French, Spanish, Brazilian Portuguese, 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 Italian, German. He also has a great competency in, you heard it already, Esperanto, Dutch, Mandarin. I mentioned German already, American Sign Language. So do you reckon, Benny, there's anyone in Ireland that is as proficient in as many languages? I know you're very modest. Is there anyone in Ireland that is as proficient in as many languages as you are?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh,
yeah.
Is there? Okay.
Like, I know it sounds impressive when you list it all off like that, but I have been in this language learning community for quite a while, and I've gone to conferences and such.
Yeah.
And I've definitely met people, including Irish people, who are way more clever than I am. And like I've got this range of languages, but some of them would have maybe a smaller number, but at an incredibly impressive level. Like, they would be indistinguishable from a native speaker. And I've met people who speak Irish who aren't Irish, who are from many different countries, and their Irish completely outshines my Irish, which really puts things in perspective. So, yeah, absolutely. It does sound impressive, but, like, I've been doing this for 20 years, and I've made a career out of learning languages. So when it becomes something you can invest a lot of time in, and, you know, maybe people listening, they might have more time this summer.
Yeah.
And if you can dive in, just speaking that one extra language is the beginning of opening a whole new world to yourself.
Okay.
So people can aspire to be a polyglot, but I that first language is just it just changes your entire world.
Okay, say with us, Benny, and we're talking to Benny Brendan Lewis from Cavan originally. He is a polyglot. He speaks numerous languages. I listed them all there. List them again after the break. And we're also going to be asking him, how can you, if there is such a thing, what is the easiest way in this smartphone world we live in, connected world? We can talk. If you want to talk to somebody in Esperanto 20 years ago, you had to put an ad in the paper and you might eventually get a phone call. all. Today, from what Benny is saying, and it's true, in the next few minutes you could Google Esperanto, Google an Esperanto speaking group and be on a Zoom with them by 2:30. Well, it's now 2:30. Joe at RTE.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Learning a new language can apparently offset the onset, God forbid, of Alzheimer's. Benny Lewis is close to being proficient in 20 languages at this stage. This is the man who got a B in Pass Irish in his leaving cert. Margaret, you're listening to Benny, the polyglot.
Well,
you learned Russian, did you?
I did. I was in Belarus for a while, and being immersed there, you know, I had to make the best of it.
Okay.
And when I came, I was only there for a few weeks. But when I came back, I practiced the few words I had on all the people in the shops here, because Russian is our second language for us now. And you have to be prepared to laugh at yourself and have other people laugh at you. But the funniest one I can remember was I didn't know the word for rooster. And everybody in Belarus has a little, you know, garden with hens.
Okay.
And they curry, you see. So anyway, I was stuck for a word. And, you know, when you're stuck, you have to be inventive. So I said a hen's husband.
Ah, good, what good
and
stuff.
And they fell around the place laughing.
And how proficient do you reckon you are in Russian now, Marguerite?
Well, I can make a phone call, and you know, when I realised when I could talk to them in the airport, you know, and get my luggage
Fantastic.
Back and so on and so forth, I could manage. But I have a Russian godchild now as well, and the other thing that came to mind was French, because I did a few languages at school, and when you have one language, it's easier to learn another. And in fact, if you have two languages, even better. And the thing about Russian is there are a lot of words in it that are of French origin.
Oh,
believe it or not.
Okay.
And to be able to see the, you know, to compare them is interesting. But the funniest one I ever had was when I went to France after school.
Okay.
I was 17 and I was amazed to see the man of the house cooking. He was Egyptian. He had been the chief of staff of Farouk's Air Force before Nasser came to power, and of course he had to flee. He was married to a French woman, and I said, I observed that in France men were very domestique. And he hung on to the sink and he laughed and laughed and laughed, and his wife laughed as well, because domestique is the word for a tame animal, as in a house dog or a house cat.
Okay. But you weren't far off now. And have you?
The thing about languages is you can learn languages by listening to the radio, and once you know when you start first, you find yourself confused, and then you pick up a few words and you recognise them and you're translating. But after a while, you discover you're not translating anymore, and then then you've got it.
Okay.
You know.
And
they're fun. Languages are fun, and they should be taught in that way.
Yeah,
I mean, this idea of teaching people grammar is ridiculous.
Okay, but languages are fun, Marguerite. I completely and totally would love to agree with you, but have we not in the teaching of Irish?
Has it
not put people off learning a beautiful
which Irish is
a beautiful language, but learning the fact that it was obligatory, mandatory, you probably spent more hours doing Irish in primary school and secondary school every week than you did on your favourite subject. I know Irish was a favourite subject.
You did the Christian Brothers grammar.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, it was beaten into us. I didn't look, until I was well grown up and went to the Iron Islands. I never knew what the Tishilgendaduct was or anything else because we were taught the wrong way. You should be taught by immersion and speaking it. And the joke of that was that when I was at school, the teacher used to write Ramesh at the bottom of my English or my Irish essay at Leaving Cert every year. And I got honours Irish to beat her.
Well done.
And when she had nobody, her favourites wouldn't go into the debates, the Gaelin debates, I did.
Okay, brilliant. But you were totally, and this is the world that we now live in, which Benny was alluding to there, that the world in terms of learning a new language has changed dramatically in the last two decades, even in the last decade. And you say you believe in the immersion method. Listen to radio.
Yes.
If you're watching television or a movie, put it on in the language, which is fairly easy to do, as Benny said. Go into a conversation group. And do people now know that if you have Alexa in the house, you can say, Alexa, translate into Irish. Liveline is my favourite radio programme. And Alexa will translate it into Irish. Then you say, Alexa, translate into French. And then you say, I want a cup of coffee and two croissants. And that's another way of learning.
You can have the portable translators, but I think it's much more fun to learn by speaking to the people and watching the expressions on their faces, you know?
Well, I remember...
And the more you can laugh at yourself, the better.
Well, I remember in a previous incarnation, Benny and Marguerite, by the way, 1850, 0818 715 815, joe@rt.ie from anywhere in the world, in any language, joe@rt.ie. But I remember, it must be 30 years ago, interviewing a man called John Lucy. And the way I remember John is John was the founder of Dubliner Cheese. I don't know if he still owns it, but it's still going strong and he was trying to get it off the ground. But John was telling us that he went to China to try and learn the language. And what he did was, this is before smartphones, before internet, he went into the Early Learning Centre. I don't know if the shop is still there in Henry Street in Dublin. And he bought a kiddie set of how to teach children English. In other words, A for apple, B for whatever bucket. And he bought a load of these coloured cards. Apple, bucket, go on, hundreds he bought. He used to stand on the corner in Beijing or whatever, on a street, and he'd hold up the card with the apple on it, okay? And people would invariably stop. And he'd point at the apple and he would say, apple, and they would say, whatever the Mandarin is or whatever for apple.
Very good.
For a bit. And that's how he got a start in Chinese, which I thought was ingenious. But it's changed dramatically.
Absolutely brilliant.
Okay.
Brilliant.
Stay there, Marguerite. Orn a little.
Joe, another way to do it is, I had a Belarusian girl in the house here. I looked after her for a while and I had one of the carers over. And when I wanted to give instructions to her, and I wasn't very fluent and she didn't have any English, I used to draw matchstick men.
Oh, great.
And stick them on the fridge.
Yeah. And Marguerite, what do you think of this theory? Now, though, I could only find one study that did add credence to it, that learning a second language offsets the onset, as we get older, obviously, of the likes of Parkinson's. Can offset the onset.
Absolutely. I would agree.
Okay.
And being in the older category myself now, I find that that's a very good way. And if you can read in the language, listen to the language, and also do your crosswords, you're on the pig's back.
Oh, wow. Do hang on in the crosswords. Orna Little, 51551 text. Orna.
Yes, hello.
South Korea, you're listening to Benny. Are you surprised? Are you taken aback or in awe? Benny, Irish, English, French, Spanish, Brazilian, Portuguese, 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 Italian, German, Dutch, Mandarin, Esperanto, American Sign Language. That's just a start. Catalan is another language. Are you in awe, Orna?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. I don't speak quite so many languages myself. But the best way to learn any language is to go out and be there and be around it. And, I mean, I learned a lot of my Korean from dance classes as well when I was out there.
Ah.
So, absolutely, yeah.
And what were you doing? What were you doing out there, Orna?
I went out to teach English. I went out to bring languages to other people.
And did you learn Korean?
Yeah. I didn't go out kind of intentionally to learn Korean, but, you know, you pick up what you need to survive, I suppose. I picked up enough to be able to have a conversation. You know, you can order your food. I could obviously do quite well in the dance class. I learned a lot through the dance classes. It's just that it wasn't my intention, I suppose, to become fluent at the time. But, you do. You really pick up a lot from being immersed in it, literally.
And how did you find Korean? Because Benny, much to my surprise, is saying that he found it the most logical, I think is the word he used, the most logical language.
It is. It's a very logical language. Yeah, okay. It has a lot of nice structures and it follows the rules. It's, but it's not quite like English where there's bits all over the place. It follows quite a lot of the rules it's supposed to, and it's quite easy to learn in terms of the alphabet and all of that as well. It's not a complicated language, I suppose, to learn.
And I see that you, I did not, you teach K-pop classes in Dublin.
I do. Huh. I do.
Huh. What a day.
I do, yeah. I mean, I did all that training while I was out there. I took classes a lot while I was there, you know, and I started teaching out there first. And then I came back to Ireland and said, you know, what do I do with myself now? Well, I have all this training, I have all this dance teaching experience. I'm going to set up K-pop classes here. And I've been doing that since 2018.
Well, what's the difference? I should know. What's the difference between K-pop and dancing and pop dancing or strictly come dancing or limbo
sure,
dancing?
I mean, For what I do with K-pop, the big thing is people are into specific groups, specific bands, you know.
Okay, yeah.
And so what I do is I learn the dance that band has done for their music video, for their performances, their stages. So I learn the official choreography, if you like, of what this group is putting out. And then fans of that group will come to the classes to learn the dance by their favorite group. Like, for example, Stray Kids just had a release last week. So I now this Friday will be teaching that specific dance that they have just released.
So you've been studying that all week?
I'm practicing right now. When the phone rang there, that's what I was practicing.
And isn't that the wonder of the world we live in now with smartphones and internet and iPads, that you can be immediately learning the new dance from a South Korean pop band, and you can be you can be teaching it hopefully this Friday in the Liffey Trust Studios down there in the North Wall in Dublin.
Yep.
Wow.
And every Friday.
Incredible. And did you get? Is there much interest in K-pop dancing lessons in Dublin?
There is. Yeah, the classes will be good. It fluctuates depending on the band and the group. Some people will come every week regardless because they love the style. And then we have people who come and go when it's their favourite group or their favourite band, you know. But the numbers will be solid every week. There is a surprising amount of people that are into K-pop here. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks indeed. That's Arna Little. That's South Korean. Marguerite was Russian. Anya O'Sullivan. Anya, good afternoon. You're Irish. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Joe. Yes, I missed a lot of the previous callers, but... Okay. I just want to make the point that the system let us all down this country, and really children need to hear songs and rhymes from the cradle onwards. Okay. And one doesn't have to be a native Irish speaker or even a speaker of Irish to do a few little rhymes with children. It needs to happen in our preschools, and it needs to happen in our creches. And our teachers need that support as well.
Okay.
And it's not a huge thing to learn a few rhymes and just to use them with children, you know, in the normal way during the day. That's the way nature intended us to transmit language. And it's fun, and the children love it. And it's good for the adults as well.
And Anya, are you the same Anya I'm thinking of?
Yes, I know you, Joe. Yeah,
brother. Okay, but I know you're evangelical about teaching Irish true rhymes and songs and accessible...
But Joe, that's what nature intended. Okay. That's what nature intended. It needs to be fun, and like rhymes are so educational as well as everything else. And from birth to seven, the children, they don't learn it, they actually acquire it. So to learn it, they need to hear it. And they're not hearing it early enough in their development. And any parent or preschool provider or granny or a childminder out there, they all need to get their hands on a few Irish rhymes and just do them naturally. Like, for example, if you're drinking maybe a glass of water, you go, Ishke, 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 Glay, Toche, Gudas, Ismahlame. So you see that last sentence has the first person. So if you do that rhyme every time you'd be drinking a glass of water with a baby or a child or a toddler, they just absorb those sounds and they'd have that full sentence, Ismahlame, I like it. Toche Gudas, it's nice. They have those sentences ingrained just automatically. It happens unconsciously. And it's fun and it's good for the adult. It's good for the adult too to be rhyming and to do songs with children.
Okay.
It's good for the heart. It's good for our immune system and it's good for our blood pressure. It reduces blood pressure when okay. you're rhyming and doing a few little songs with children.
And do people know that if you have Alexa or any of the those connectivity, those speaker, that you can say to Alexa, Alexa, tell me, repeat, translate this phrase into Irish. It's right in the house beside you if you have Alexa, and you'll buy an Alexa set if you don't believe the CIA are listening in. And yeah. why would they want to listen? You buy Alexa for 20 quid. Oh, and you're going to meet a Mahogood. And afterwards.
But Joe, before
yes,
I go, rhymes have a critical role in language acquisition.
Okay.
And the preschool curriculum, it's all wrong. Like it's 30 minutes or 35 minutes for Irish every day. By the time the children have their books out of their Mála Scola, sure, there's probably 8 or 10 minutes gone.
Okay.
The children need to hear it before they go to school. All parents and grandparents out there need to learn a few okay. little simple
and
rhymes.
They probably have them in their muscle memory. When it comes back to them, they'll hold on to it. They realise, like
that's the
riding
way we
a bike.
Acquire language,
yeah.
Joe.
Okay.
That's the way nature okay. intended us to transmit language with rhymes and songs. That's how we remember things with rhymes ourselves.
Okay. That's Anya Sullivan. Well done. I need to take a break. Anne, is that you, Anne, in Cannes?
Definitely.
What are you doing ringing me again for?
What did you say?
What are you doing ringing me again for in work?
I didn't ring you.
You've been on.
Brenda rang me.
Brilliant.
Brenda rang me.
Brilliant.
Where did you go for your holiday last week?
And I presume everyone knows, anyone who listens regularly to Liveline knows that you... Did you not email us today?
Are we still on air?
Yes, of course we are, darling.
I daren't say. I'm just home from... I've had quite a lot of wine. I'm just home from an IWCO lunch, the Women's Group of the Riviera. But I wanted to tell you a little
okay,
story.
Okay, no, hang on. I've got to take a break, Anne. I was only trying to find out, was it you? You emailed us, I told, to say you need...
I will tell you the story
after
the break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
The conversation began, well, it began last week about with that fascinating point made. As the SIG was running at the end and Ray Darcy was in here screaming at me for being late again, he's so upset, I think he took the week off. But one of our callers said that learning a new language offsets the onset of... the likes of, she believed, Parkinson's. And then we came across this man, Benny, Brendan Lewis from Cavan. He's now in South Korea learning Korean. I think North Korean and South Korean are generally the same, even though North Korea, I'm sure, would say they invented everything. But anyway, Benny is proficient. I reckon in nearly 16 languages, including Esperanto, Mandarin, Dutch, Irish, Portuguese, Italian, German, Spanish, Italian. Did I mention Mandarin? Okay, where's Anne in Cannes? Now, Anne, you emailed us and you said to us a few minutes ago, that's why Brenda rang, you said to us, I can speak 5 languages.
Well, more or less, yes.
And what are they? Is English one of them?
Of course. Well, I hope so. Aren't we speaking it now? English, Irish, French, German, Italian, and a little Greek.
Well, the English is your first, obviously. How do you live in France, as we all know?
I learned it in school, and then I went to the Goethe Institute in Dublin, then I went to Heidelberg University, and then I went to Florence University years ago.
And which was of the languages, French... Did you say Greek?
Italian. Yeah, German. And I joined the Irish Hellenic Society when I was in sixth year in Loreto, and we had 6 members, and now we have 600, and I'm still an honorary member nearly 60 years later.
So you love languages?
Yes, I do. Well, I mean, I love to travel, and I believe that you shouldn't be able to travel if you can't speak the language. One of the awful things about, I love France, most French people can't speak a second language, so they can't go anywhere. And if they go to Canada, they can only go to Montreal and Quebec, because they're 2 French cities. It's sad. Very sad. Very, very sad.
What's your... stop me. I want to know you. Tell me anyway, if this is a stupid question, Anne. What is your favourite language?
Well, it's got to be the one we're speaking. I'm the best at it. Yes, yes.
Is French not a beautiful language?
It is a beautiful language. It's quite difficult, Joe. It's quite difficult.
Okay.
Yeah, because I'll tell you what's difficult about it as opposed to Italian. In Italian, every syllable is pronounced. So even if you're stuck, but in France, they speak so rapidly and they cut off the end of the word. So you, and they sometimes leave out ne when it's negative. So they say je sais pas. They don't say je ne sais pas.
Ah,
so
yes.
You don't know whether they're saying I know it or I don't know it.
Yeah, yeah.
It can be difficult. And I was going to tell you the mistake I made when I first came here. Okay, we came from New York, and my husband's French was much better than mine, but I thought mine was reasonably good.
Yeah.
And we were both in the... I was working for the Irish government, he was working for the UN. We'd meet people in the same businesses,
uh-huh.
and they were all foreigners, and a lot of them were French. And let's say you came with me to a party with
okay.
my husband,
okay?
Yes, okay? And I would say to a French diplomat, may I introduce you to my friend Joe?
Yeah, okay? Yeah.
I would say, est-ce que je peux introduire Joe à vous? But... Introduire means to have sex.
Oh, geez,
you must say présenté.
Présenté.
But nobody told me. Yeah, introduire means may I have sex with you. And people would either laugh or walk away. And my husband knew this, and he just laughed for a whole year. He never told me.
And is your husband still with us, by the way? I don't want to be...
No, he died. He died right. 11 years ago.
Oh,
he was good fun. He was good fun.
Okay.
He was good
but,
fun.
But many languages...
He's been replaced by a Kiwi.
Okay. I'll come back to you in a second about that Kiwi, a fruit.
No, I know.
But Anne, was your husband proficient in many languages?
Yes, he was. He spoke perfect Irish, perfect English,
yeah.
perfect French, and perfect Spanish.
So Irish, English, French, and Spanish, and I'm sure he couldn't get a word in edgeways in any language. Now, you normally ring his aunt to tell us how beautiful the weather is out down the Riviera.
Now, today was lovely. I had a lovely lunch with the IWC, the International Women's Club of the Riviera. We had the AGM and a lunch.
And what language do you speak?
It's all in English. We have 37 nationalities and 670 members, all living on the Riviera. It's all women. But you can bring your husband if you have one to some things. And the AGM was today. It's lovely today. It's about 20, quite cool,
okay.
about
and what
27
did you have,
degrees.
What did you have for your lunch?
We had the most lovely foie gras to start, and then a risotto of mussels and fresh salmon, and a tiramisu, and white, red, or rosé wine, and cafe at a swimming pool. There were 40 of us. It was lovely, absolutely lovely.
And
20 euro a head.
And I don't normally dislike live line callers, but in your case, I'm going to make an exception.
Why?
Because you're making us so jealous every time you come on.
No, Joe, I would return to Dublin tomorrow.
I know that.
If they had a good health system and a teeny bit better climate. I love my apartment in Blackrock.
Well, the health system is improving. It is now.
I know
France is unbeatable in that sense. I know that.
Well, according to the French, it's getting worse. They're striking all the time.
It's
impossible to make them happy. They're never happy with their presidents. They're never happy with that. They want to retire at 62. It's the only country in Europe where people want to retire. And they're striking and burning up cars and burning... Because he's raising it to 64. Every other country is 66 or 67. And we accept it.
Okay.
You know, we have to accept it.
Okay. Go to me, Margaret.
I have a question for you, Joe.
Oh,
where did you go for your week's holiday?
Wexford.
I thought I saw you at the Cannes Film Festival. I was sure it was you.
Oh, my God, I wish.
I was waving back? No, you never waved back.
It wasn't me. Merci beaucoup, Anne.
Au revoir.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Joe Duffy. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
The conversation began with Benny Polyglot Brendan Lewis from Cavan. Benny, you don't know what you've started here. Benny, you believe you must go to a country, you should try and go to a country to learn one of the 20 languages you know. But how do you pay for all this, Benny?
No, you don't have to go to the country. I've actually learned most of my languages before going.
Okay.
So with Korean... I did most of my studying actually in Indonesia, which obviously does not speak Korean, just because it was a cheap country, and I did lots of studying. I got my lessons with a teacher, and, you know, like you were just talking about Irish, if people wanted to get a bit more of, like, this immersive feeling in Irish, you can actually change your phone's language if it's an Android. change your phone to Irish. You can change your computer if you switch to Linux. You can have your entire operating system Osgailga. Okay.
And how do you kind of give
you this sense of immersion.
But the number of countries you've been in, how many countries have you been in at this stage in your life, Benny? 100?
No, because I travel very slowly and stay for 3 months or so. It's more along the lines of 50.
Okay, well, hello. Yeah, it's brilliant. But how do you pay for your travels?
So a lot of countries are a lot cheaper than you would expect. Even though Korea is, Seoul is expensive, when I'm leaving Seoul, I found lovely accommodation on the beach with a view in Busan, the second largest city. I'm only paying €300 for a whole week for this really nice big apartment.
Okay. Benny, thanks indeed. You want to say good afternoon and bye-bye and have a nice summer in Esperanto?
Okay, adiao, kai bonan someron, kai gis la revido. And I hope people check out my site and get more encouragement if they want to learn language themselves.
And it's Benny the Polyglot. His name is Brendan Lewis. I'll give you more details tomorrow. Lots more people want to talk about all the tips they have in the new world we are in today of learning language. Shanna Gorman produced, and Catherine Thomas is next.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.